This is The Crime. I am your host, Wesley Fox, loyal comrade and editor of PrescientSciFi.com. For this episode, this is number 31, I am going solo to talk sequels, prequels, reboots, and the question of whether they will end. We are about the one-year anniversary for Thought Crime, roughly. And now that we're here at the one-year anniversary, I'm gonna maybe take a look at what things have gone right and what things have gone wrong with this new podcast. Definitely some lessons learned. This is my first time doing this kind of thing. When I started this a year ago, I obviously had no experience in podcasting, radio, entertainment, talk shows, or anything like that. So there was definitely some rough patches. There were some episodes that probably bombed, some discussions that kind of went nowhere. So we're going to definitely try to clear those things up and maybe do a little better for year two. And some of the things I'm kicking around is one is maybe the idea of shortening each episode. Usually the running time is somewhere around 60 minutes, 65 minutes, and we've usually averaged over an hour. And I've heard from a couple people, namely my co-hosts, that they tend to start getting a little bit tired towards the end. So, and we're also thinking, in order to maybe just be cleaner, maybe only deal with one or two questions or one or two topics instead of having usually I have four or five things I want to go through. So maybe doing a little bit less. So I'm kicking the idea of maybe capping the show at about 40 to 45 minutes. As soon as I get to that point, I'll just be like, all right, we got to close it up here and then, close up and finish. So I'm considering doing that. Don't know if really the show is too long. There's a lot of podcasts. They're an hour, hour and a half sometimes. So I don't know. That's one idea. The other idea is to kind of broaden out the topics. I'm kind of moving in that area anyway, because frankly, when it comes to for example, the sci-fi movies, there's just not enough of them. And there's a lot of them there's a couple of them every year that just me and Microsoft Matt just refuse to go to. So, we can't just do six or seven reviews a year, and there's a lot of sci-fi movies out there. So I think going ahead, I'm going to try a little bit harder to find those kind of maybe straight to DVD or straight to streaming movies. Some of them are pretty, whether they're indie or whether they're just low budget. Some of them are crap, but some of them turned out to be very good. Ex Machina is one. And also Midnight Special, which I will review. There's a review online right now. I'm not sure if we're going to do a podcast on it. But anyway, so there are some other science fiction movies out there that maybe are worth talking about that just aren't in theaters. So I'm thinking of doing that because that'll add maybe another five or six shows a year. There's just more of them out there. I think I might still be a little picky, maybe pick ones that might have at least one or two recognizable stars, or at least I have some idea going in of, what kind of reviews it's getting and maybe if it's worth, looking at or not. So, cause I don't like to sit around and trash a movie for 45 minutes. I guess it could be fun, but not for me. Of course, other topics with John, it's been a little bit difficult because there's certain things he loves to talk about, but there's just many things that, we just don't have much of a rapport going. Like I've said previously in the opening episodes of this podcast, I've always been kind of eager to look for, guest co-hosts, people that come in that have an entirely different expertise or kind of different background, or they're geeked out on something else, or they're a fan of a genre, a fan of a franchise I know nothing about, gamers. Fortunately, it's been kind of tough to find people willing to come on a podcast. A lot of people, I guess, that podcast on the stuff have their own show. So I guess maybe in year two, I'm going to maybe approach some of these other podcasts and maybe, propose doing a cross-link. They come on my show, and if they want, I would come on their show. Something like that. I don't know. But trying to broaden it out a little bit. I didn't really get kind of the wide array of types of shows I was hoping for the first year of Thought Crime. So I'm going to try that. I'm going to try and cover more books. Here's the problem with that. One of the big sections of Thought Crime is author interviews with indie or self-published or kind of like authors on the rise that aren't big names yet. And maybe it would take time to talk to a nobody like me. And we did four author interviews in the first year of Thought Crime. Now I wanted at least twice that. I wanted 8 to 10 per year, maybe even 12 per year, one a month. I ran into a couple problems doing that in the first year. First is entirely my fault. I didn't read enough indie novels or enough of these novels to identify enough authors that I felt like it would be worth them coming on. I read only about maybe 15 to 16 novels in the last year that are indie science fiction. I kind of got wrapped up in some research for my own book. I read a lot of like mainstream literature in the last year. And so it kind of crowded out some of those books. And in addition, among those 15 or 16 books I read, half of them were underdeveloped. They had stylistic and basic issues that were just, for me, non-starters. And I didn't want to bring an author on the show if I genuinely just did not like their book, or I thought their book was just bad. I mean, it just wasn't ready. It's not ready. It needed to be revised, you know, evolved, whatever. So that was one problem in it, and that kind of knocked off half of them. The other problem I ran into, though, is that I actually reached out to three authors in the last year and proposed to do an interview, you know, bring them on the show. I already wrote a review of their book. It was on my website. And those three authors never got back to me. They did not answer their emails. I actually tried tweeting them and a few other, you know, creative ways of contacting them, and they never got back to me. Now, if you are an author or doing anything where you're trying to promote yourself, answer your fucking email. I mean, this is a no-brainer. Somebody wants to talk to you about your work. I mean, to me, I would always say yes to that. Every author interviewer that has contacted me, I've said yes to every single one. So that, I don't understand that. I guess maybe either they just don't check their emails, or maybe I tried to contact them the wrong way. And if that's the case, they should probably put a better contact information on their websites and on their author sites. You know, those are three or four missed opportunities. I don't know. Maybe they just figured since they'd never heard of my podcast, or maybe they checked and figured, well, it looks like he doesn't have much traffic, so I'm just not going to bother. You know what, if you're an indie author and you're honestly turning down interviews because the interviewer is not a big deal, I mean, I think that says a lot about you. And it suggests to me that you're probably going to stay exactly where you are. So anyway, that was the problem. I'm going to try and read more indies this year. I'm going to try and shoot for 8 author interviews for this coming year, the second year of Thought Crime. So that's my goal for that one as well. So those are the kind of the three or four areas. Also just broadening the topic area. I think we're going to talk more TV, just regular TV shows. Maybe, I'm going to maybe stretch it out a little bit to include, spec fiction, like fantasy, superheroes. I generally avoided those things because, pressing sci-fi is primarily science fiction, but I feel like so many people kind of put sci-fi and fantasy and superheroes all in the same category that, I think they would listen and they would not be confused if a sci-fi channel started, or a sci-fi show or sci-fi whatever, started talking about, you know, maybe a little bit of fantasy, maybe the superhero stuff on TV or whatever. I think I'm still going to try and focus on science fiction most of the time, but I think I'm going to do Game of Thrones. I love Game of Thrones and I love talking about Game of Thrones, so I think I'm going to start doing Game of Thrones recaps, or I don't know, mid-season reviews or end-of-season reviews, something like that, for Game of Thrones. And then also I'm going to try and pick up on a few other shows. We did one or two shows on Walking Dead, and I'm going to try and find a couple more so that we have a few more kind of TV things to talk about rather than just movies. So anyway, if you have any thoughts, email me, jwfox@prescientscifi.com. If you are an author, you should contact me. Right now, my to-read pile is actually very short. And as I said, Thought Crime is taking kind of a break here. We're going to take a few weeks off. And so I have a few weeks here to catch up on some reading. And so if you want your book read and reviewed by me, your book's science fiction, email me at jwfox@prescientscifi.com or find me on Goodreads. You know, check the other interviews I've done with other authors, you know, listen to the ones I did with Rhett C. Bruno and Mark Healy, and just, you know, decide for yourself whether you think an interview like that is worth it, you know, whether you can use that for your media kit, when you approach, when if you're doing your own promotional work, or if maybe you're trying to promote yourself on your own website, because I think there's really a genuine lack of media coverage for science fiction literature, for novels, fiction, whatever you want to, you know, whatever you want to call it. There's Locus magazine. There's a few of these old time classic magazines and from like the early 20th century, mid 20th century, or they're kind of like these old classic literary magazines. They have reader bases, but I mean, if you read them, you can tell that it's not really a very wide audience that they're aiming at. They're usually very overly intellectual, very smart. I mean, there's some good stuff in there, but it's clearly not for everyone. And then a lot of the science fiction blogs are, you know, very narrow. They usually only do one or two or three kind of things. They don't really stay up on things. You know, there's like weeks and weeks in between posts. They don't have a lot of traffic, and they don't seem to talk to one another or cooperate. And that's the thing I've found in the first year of doing this, that there's not a lot of cooperation or cross-linking. There is some of it. I mean, there are some people that do it. I'm not saying it's just a bunch of island. We're all just a bunch of islands. But I just noticed that a lot of, particularly authors and certain writers, their attitude seems to be, what's in it for me? If you go to their blogs, they talk about themselves a lot. I mean, I like to talk about someone's work. I don't really want to talk about them individually and about their struggles of being a writer. Because I'll be honest, like I am a writer, and I do love to talk about some of the things I struggle with. But I also understand that most people that are not writers, I don't think they really find it as fascinating or as interesting. And I think a lot of people probably just kind of say, yeah, you know, whatever. It's not really, I mean, I'm sure it is hard, but I don't really want to, you know, listen to you talk about it or read about it on your blog. They tell you, I mean, I've had like media people tell me, you know, talk about the process, talk about what you're thinking, talk about this, talk about that. Well, a lot of author sites do that, and a lot of their Twitter feeds, they do all the social media, they do all the things that I'm sure marketing people tell them to do, and a lot of them end up nowhere. They get, you know, 50 to 60 customer reviews on Goodreads or Amazon, and then that's it. So, I mean, it could be one of two things. Either one, the whole strategy is flawed, or two, these people just happen to be very uninteresting, or both. So anyway, that's been my general kind of experience with people in the genre, whether it's media, whether it's science fiction blogs, science fiction magazines. There's just, the universe is very large, the science fiction universe, and so you can't cover everything, of course, but it's also just, I feel like we could be doing a better job of promoting ourselves, not just as writers and as maybe indie publishers, but also as a genre, as, you know, trying to raise ourselves up. Because let's be honest, fantasy, in terms of spec fiction, fantasy is way ahead of science fiction. And in terms of all the genres, you know, if you include all the other genre fiction categories, we have a very committed and loyal readership, but it's not growing. And, I've talked about the reasons why on a few other podcasts, but I think one of the reasons is we kind of promote ourselves to each other, and then that's it. And then even then, I don't think we're very good at it. And I think we could probably just, you know, take a few pointers from others and in other industries and other web types of websites, and maybe learn a little bit about how to be a little bit more of a more broader community, because I get the impression that everyone has like their own little fiefdom or their own island, and they only care about that, and everyone else be damned. And I think we can't really afford to be that exclusionary anymore. Just, it's not good for us. It's not good for the art form. It's not good for the genre, and it's just not good business. So, all right, moving along to the main topic at hand, which was sequels, prequels, reboots, et cetera, are basically the steady diet of basically the same franchises, movies over and over and over again every year, year in, year out. Marvel, DC, Jurassic World. I mean, how many sequels and prequels? I mean, most of the movies we see out there are based on another movie in some way. And some of them are pretty bad. And I think they might be getting a little worse. And the one obvious example is probably the biggest bomb of the year, which just premiered last weekend, Independence Day Resurgence. I'm going to do a quick review. I don't want to do a full review. Me and Microsoft Matt decided not to do a review of the movie because it was so terrible and really was not aimed. It was aimed at kids. It was basically a movie for teenagers and for younger viewers, you know, somewhere between the ages of 10 and 16, 10 and 18. It was insulting to anyone who's older, or just cheesy. Maybe that's a better word. It's just really, really, I mean, the original was too, but there's a difference between these two movies. And so that's what I'll get into. Independence Day number one, or ID4, as it decided to call itself for some reason, made about $300+ million and was just a dynamite success. It was the top grossing film of 1996. Wow. 20 years. And even though the critics all thought it was a cheesy alien movie that didn't really deserve a whole lot of attention, a lot of people saw it and a lot of people enjoyed it, including myself. I thought it was a cool movie. I was 13 years old, but I liked it. And there's a couple of reasons that I think the first one was better, probably would have gotten better customer review ratings if we had something like Rotten Tomatoes in 1996. And I think the reason was that there was no movie like Independence Day in 1996 or 95. Like, we had yet to get into the era of Marvel, DC, of overloading CGI, of these broad, like, disaster movies. Like, we were just beginning to get into these, like, world, global scale sci-fi movies. The top movies of 1996, other than Independence Day, were Twister, Mission Impossible, The Rock, Star Trek First Contact, which is science fiction, but clearly is for a different demographic. So none of these are science fiction. None of these are big, big, big action movies. Maybe The Rock is. So The Rock, which is an R-rated, you know, gunplay, classic action movie, summer blockbuster. This is what The Rock is, the embodiment of what a summer blockbuster used to be in the 80s and 90s. It was a shoot 'em up. That's what it was. There was nothing like Independence Day. And so it was the only one of its kind. It had a brilliant promotional campaign. The ads for it, the trailers for it were all very, very subtle and kind of hinted. They didn't show you a lot of what happens in the movie. It gave you little glimpses of here and there. I mean, it was very cool. It really, really got you excited and wondering what's going on in this movie. And they revealed so little, and they did a great job of really getting people to show up those July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th when it came out. So that's what happened in 1996 with Independence Day. Great promotional campaign. It had very little competition. CGI was in its infancy, and it really used CGI well. It had Will Smith, who was, you know, just one of the top, you know, talents, one of the most popular, charismatic guys you'll meet even 20 years ago. So that's where that movie comes from. Now, let's fast forward to Resurgence in the year 2016. 20 years later, today, what is the atmosphere now? Well, or, you know, what's the competition now? Well, we've had 20 years of big budget CGI movies, of global world conflicts, apocalyptic battles, disaster movies. We've had, you know, just incredible. We've had the introduction of 3D technology. We had Avatar. We've had these movies come out in just 5 or 6 at a time every year for the last 15, 20 years. So and a lot of them are sci-fi, and a lot of them involve aliens or weird creatures. And then there's even the fantasy movies that have all sorts of weird creatures. You know, we had the whole Lord of the Rings series come out and The Hobbit between 96 and 2016. So in other words, Independence Day Resurgence was not special, not like the original was. It has been released before Star Trek Beyond and after Captain America Civil War, after Batman and Robin Dawn of Justice. So moviegoers that go to these popcorn munching action, you know, turn your brain off kind of movies, we've already seen 2 or 3 of these movies already. So, you know, it's just plugged in the middle. And if you compare it to these other movies, it's not nearly as good. The dialogue is cheesy. It's not very funny. I mean, Captain America, the Marvel movies are kind of funny, and Deadpool, of course, was hysterical. Independence Day Resurgence just isn't that clever or funny or witty. It did not have Will Smith, probably the most memorable character from the original movie. I mean, if you're going for a younger demographic, you got to understand that most of them were not born yet when the original movie came out, and they have no idea who Jeff Goldblum is, or Bill Pullman, or Brent Spiner. So you have three of your major stars in this casting. Most of your target demographic have never heard of, or vaguely are not interested in seeing their movies anyway. I mean, the casting was just... And then they brought in... I guess they figured they would balance that with three younger stars, Liam Hemsworth, Micah Monroe, and Jesse Usher, I guess. None of them have anywhere near the charisma of Will Smith. Not even close. So... It had none of the advantages that Independence Day had in 96, and it has all the same weaknesses, and it just got clobbered. I think only 48% of viewers enjoyed it, which is really bad. Really, really bad. Even bad movies can get 55, 60%. If you can't even break 50, that means over half of the people that paid money to see the movie... Also, by the way, a lot of these people were probably excited to see the movie. Otherwise, they would not have paid $10 to see it the first weekend. And they came away disappointed. So, bad. Just really, really bad. That's just my quick review of Independence Day or Independence Day Resurgence. And just the general's, meaning that, hey, let's do a sequel of a great movie from 20 years ago. Not a good idea. But it's also like a lot of us, we've been complaining about these constant sequels, prequels, and reboots that Hollywood's been doing for the last, I don't know how long. Basically, they don't have any new ideas. They just repackage or sequel or kind of add on to existing franchises. There's very few original content movies as far as spec fiction, sci-fi, fantasy is concerned. So, it's an easy thing to complain about. We've all joke about it. We've said about it for years. So the question is, why does Hollywood keep doing it? Well, the obvious answer is we are still going to these movies as much as we complain. A lot of these movies are making a shit ton of money. That's why they keep doing it. But I think 2016, this might be the first year that we see the first downward trend in box office receipts for sequels. I think this is the first time where this is the first financial signal or market signal that... To Hollywood, that the demand for, familiar franchises, for sequels, for reboots, that the demand is dropping, and that maybe they might want to think about turning over to some newer or somewhat original content. And it sounds crazy. It sounds like a foolish hope, but I'm going to give you the business case for it, because that's what Hollywood cares about. They care about money. So here's my money case. For a while, we might see a gradual decline in the sequels and the prequels and the reboots and et cetera. Alrighty. I went through the box office results at boxofficemojo.com. It has all the financials for all the movies. And I looked at, 16 sequels... Or reboots or whatever, just kind of built on an existing franchise or an existing series. Out of those 16, only two out of 16 made more money than the previous movie or the previous movies in the series. 2 out of 16, which means 14 out of 16 made less money than their predecessors. Now let me go through them. I'll try to... And also, I included all movies for this, not just sci-fi. All right. Barbershop, Next Cut, the Ice Cube kind of comedy, mostly comedy. Yeah, it's basically a comedy. That has made less money than the previous two Barbershop movies. Zoolander 2 made nowhere near as much money as the original, and I heard it was terrible. We already talked about Independence Day Resurgence, but if you look at their box office receipts, it's on the fast track to bomb. And I'm not sure it'll make $100 million. And it cost about $200 million to make. The Huntsman, the sequel to Snow White and the Huntsman, made less money than the original. Now You See Me 2 failed miserably. Neighbors 2 failed. London Has Fallen did not do nearly... Olympus Has Fallen didn't do well either, but London Has Fallen did even worse. 10 Cloverfield Lane did not make as much money as Cloverfield, although... Cloverfield Lane wasn't exactly a sequel, but it was, similar, and obviously shares the name, so I included it. Through the Looking Glass bombed compared to Alice in Wonderland, so Johnny Depp continues to lose money for every studio that brings him in. Allegiant in the Divergent series bombed. The first two movies didn't do that great either, but they actually, you know, they all, both of them made far more money than Allegiant. Ride Along 2, the Kevin Hart movie, did not do as well as the original. Conjuring 2, it got close. Conjuring 2 got pretty close to Conjuring, but it still underperformed. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, way, way below the first movie, it bombed. X-Men Apocalypse is in seventh place among the 9 or 10 X-Men movies, and it did far less it made far less money than Days Future Past, which is its most immediate predecessor. All right, that's the 14. The two movies that made more money than the predecessor is Captain America Civil War, which topped both previous Captain America movies, and Finding Dory is doing better than Finding Nemo. So there you have it. Sequels don't make that much money this year. They make less money. So if you're a Hollywood studio and you're looking at your layout, you know, the release schedule for the next 2 or 3 years, and you're deciding which projects to greenlight, and you're seeing this financial signal that the audiences are starting to get tired of these franchises, and that maybe sequels aren't the way to go. You know, we're kind of like, okay, the first movie was good, but we're getting tired of just, you know, trying to throw together a sequel when the first movie was probably a complete story and there's nothing to add. There's also maybe some franchise fatigue starting to set in. I think X-Men, that is the case. I think, frankly, X-Men is a franchise in decline. They're not making that much money despite having these huge casts and just dynamite special effects. They have all the attributes of these big budget kind of Marvel movies, and they are not performing. There's only one exception to that, Days Future Past. Well, two, Deadpool. But Deadpool is an interesting story, so I'll get to that in a minute. But all these others, I mean, some of these are comedies, some of these are action, but I mean, it's pretty clear here. You can't just make a sequel to a successful movie. I mean, you might end up actually losing money on the sequel. So I think these studios are going to be like, all right, we got to be careful what franchises or what movies we choose to make sequels for, or prequels or reboots. And I think we're going to see less of them. Not in 2017, because most of the projects and movies that are going to come out are basically have already been greenlighted and they're already filming. So the 2017 schedule, at least the first maybe 6 months, are already basically laid out. But I think towards the end of 2017, 2018, and into 2019, I think you're going to gradually, slowly, very slowly see fewer and fewer sequels and reboots and whatnot. Because you know, they lose money. And so they're going to be more careful about which movies they're going to do that with. And that means there's going to be slots open for new content. But there's one problem with that, though. Hollywood is like, the Hollywood studios are like any other big corporation businesses. They are by nature risk averse. Once you have a lot of money and power and influence, you're afraid to lose it, and so you tend to not take any risks. You just want to maintain your position and kind of sort of play defense. If that's the case, they're going to stay to what's reliable and what's safe. And the safest thing to do is to stick to IP into existing stories and series that are familiar, that have a built-in fan base, that already have a following even before you start filming. So you might still see some comic book movies. You just may not see sequels. You might see new characters, you might see new combinations, you might see new styles, like for example the Deadpool rated R dark comedy style. I've already heard that Suicide Squad went back for some reshoots to change it from kind of the dark, you know, gritty, you know, Zack Snyder type style to something more akin to Deadpool, because they see a pattern here. You know, Deadpool made over $700 million and only cost about $80 million or $70 or $60 million to make. So they're going to go with things they're familiar. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of new, like original movies. You're just going to see things that are slightly more original. So you're probably not going to see as many sequels. You might just see, you know, movies with storylines and premises that are in existing universes. Like, for example, Star Wars Rogue One. It's in the Star Wars universe, and it uses some of the same kind of ideas from that universe. So that's kind of a safe movie, even though it's technically not a sequel. It is kind of a prequel, I guess, but it does not follow the characters or the canon directly. It's a kind of a side movie. Deadpool's kind of the same way. Deadpool is in the X-Men universe technically, but obviously does not attach itself to any of the other movies in any direct way. So I think that's what you're going to see more of. And I think that's a positive development. It's a step in the right direction. It will happen gradually. None of these things happen fast. I mean, we might have a couple sequels or, you know, the Star Trek Beyond, and we might see a couple movies maybe actually outperform their predecessors. But I think 14 sequels in 1 year, all underperforming their predecessors, that's a very big signal. So I think they can't ignore that. Also, I don't think we should bash, or maybe just consider this before we get really snobby and make jokes about Hollywood not having an original idea in decades. A lot of what they're doing now is they're taking stories and myths from the 20th century that were grand, like especially in spec fiction, that were very grand in scale and very large, you know, in a lot of ways. And we just did not have the special effects capability to really bring that to audiences in a convincing way. As we've gotten more advanced in technology, our expectations have gradually, you know, arisen, and Hollywood has been able to match that with new technology and bring these things like to life. So they figured, well, we already have like a lot of material to work with. We have a ton of comic books, graphic novels. We have a ton of just sci-fi and fantasy novels. We have movies that were probably released in the 70s and 80s that did not deliver because the special effects just could not convince anyone. It looked campy and cheesy and just didn't deliver. So they decided, well, we don't need new content. We don't need to do that. All we can do is bring the best quality material from the 20th century and use these advances in visual technology to bring those things to life in a way that we wish we could have done when these things were first made. Like when the comic books first came out, I bet you a lot of them, man, would it be great if we could make a, you know, Batman movie. But of course, they just did not have the technology and special effects and stunts. They couldn't do it. It would look ridiculous. I mean, look what they came up with. You know, Adam West as Batman and the early Superman TV shows, which I guess were popular for their time, but I guess they, you know, there's always a broader audience of people that just thought it was ridiculous. It was just too silly to watch. Well, that's not the case anymore. We see things that look very, very real. And so that's what we have now. We have all these great kind of spec fiction stories and fantasy and whatever, and they're being brought to life in a way that was never possible before. So I think they're spending their time doing that because those materials, those stories, they already have fans. You know, they fans who read the books or have the comics or maybe even liked some of those cheesy action movies from the 70s and 80s that had no special effects budget. So they didn't have to start from scratch and with something brand new, because, you know, it's a harder to convince someone to go see a movie with an entirely brand new story, characters, and visuals and everything because they're not familiar with it. And so you'd rather go with something like, hey, I know what that is. And you already have an idea of what you're about to see. And you feel like you're taking less of a risk and it's more comfortable. And you add that into the fact that we're also spending now 8 to 10 to 15 bucks on a ticket. We're gonna put a lot of careful thought into what movie we're going to spend that kind of money on. So that's the other factor as well. And really, there's nothing really wrong with that. I guess we kind of hoped that this wouldn't have crowded out original content and new content. But it really has. Basically, I heard on a previous podcast that the number of script writers in Hollywood has shrunk dramatically because studios and no one's buying new scripts anymore. They're basically hiring people to write new Iron Man scripts or Spider-Man movies. They don't need there's not enough business and there's not enough demand for other scripts beyond that. And if you don't have the rights to those characters and those stories as a writer, you really can't write it. And then try to go and sell it to a studio. And in other words, and also they probably have a preference for the writers that have already done successful scripts in the past for that franchise. So it is regrettable that it's crowding out a lot of original content, and there's a lot of really good scripts that are probably just, you know, languishing in someone's, you know, file cabinet or whatever. And that's regrettable. And I think that's that is the one drawback to living in this era of this of special effects and sequels and whatnot. But like I said, I think we could be seeing a gradual turn away from that. I think it's going to take a while before we really notice a difference, but I think we really are seeing it. We might be seeing the beginning of the end of this. And so here's a couple predictions I have going forward. I think the X-Men franchise is basically finished. The movies they have planned are Gambit and another Wolverine movie, which nobody is asking for. And Hugh Jackman's already made clear this is the last Wolverine movie he's doing, the last X-Men movie he's doing. And Hugh Jackman is one of the big draws of the franchise. He's one of the best top stars. He gets a lot of screen time in a lot of these movies. He's gotten two of his own movie. Obviously, the franchise and has really hung their hat on the star appeal of Hugh Jackman. Jennifer Lawrence, I think, has also, I think I've read in several places, has also said she's done playing Mystique. Jennifer Lawrence is another one of the big draws. I mean, her character was not really a high-profile character in the cartoon X-Men cartoons, and I think she's been elevated because they managed to get Jennifer Lawrence to play her. But she's done. So with those two gone, who do you have left? Well, you have the Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen dynamic, which is awesome for nerds like me. I love to see it, but I think those two together playing, those two are not going to save a mediocre movie, unfortunately, especially an X-Men movie. There's so many other things that need to go right in an X-Men movie. And I think that the three X-Men's where those two characters went head to head, they didn't do particularly well. They did okay. They didn't bomb, I guess, but it's pretty clear that the chemistry and the appeal of having Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen as the leads, that's not enough. I mean, it's pretty clear just from the movies. The Michael Fassbender, McAvoy combination, you've made three movies with that now. I mean, are you really going to make a fourth or a fifth? And do we really believe that dynamic is really what's carrying these movies? I don't think so. I mean, X-Men First Class is actually a really good movie, but it did not do that well. And Days Future Past, which to me wasn't really a great movie, it didn't make sense. You had a ton of things going on in that movie, and you can argue that Jennifer Lawrence stole a lot of the show in that movie. And then the most recent one, of course, X-Men Apocalypse, which did not really get great reviews. It's going to make $500 million in the end, but, the Fassbender McAvoy combination, I just don't think that's what's pulling these movies. I think they're benefiting from Jennifer Lawrence primarily, but also from, you know, they keep adding all these secondary and tertiary stars to play to characters for these stars. You know, Olivia Munn, Sophie Turner were in the last movie. Of course, they included classic characters like Storm and Archangel and Psylocke in the last movie, and that's what they did. So there's no, like, the star power didn't do anything for those characters. Those characters barely got 3 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes of screen time, and they hardly had more than two or three lines. So that's not it. It obviously centered around Jennifer Lawrence and Hugh Jackman, and they're both done. Jackman's going to do one more movie, and he's done. So that takes away two of the biggest stars in the franchise, and you're already seeing a downward trend in box office receipts. I really think this third Wolverine movie is going to crash and burn. I don't think Gambit will do that well, even though I like Channing Tatum. He is cast to be Gambit. Another area that's clearly falling off is these young adult movies, whether they're fantasy, dystopian, post-apocalyptic. They're bombing like crazy. And I think a lot of studios have already turned away from them. I think a lot of their projects they were going to do for this year and next year, they've already, you know, put a stop to them because I don't see any more on the release schedules. So I think that those types of movies are already gone. And most of them were sequels or built upon existing IP. Fantasy sequels, straight up fantasy sequels, are really struggling. I mentioned a few already, Through the Looking Glass. But even the original content, like James the Giant Slayer or Killer or whatever, that fell flat on its face. And then, of course, we had the reboot of Fantastic Four, which was a total disaster. So there's just a growing list of these reboots that are just failing. And I think Fantastic Four, I think, is done. I really don't think anyone's going to try that again for a while. I think X-Men is going to stop after the next two or three movies. I think young adult movies are going to have to move away from dystopians and post-apocalyptic nonsense. So I think they're going to have to go back into their more familiar and safer territories of fantasy, romance, cheap action, things like that. I think they're going to move away from this other stuff. I also think some of these franchises are running out of storyline. I mean, how many different kinds of ways can you tell the story of Wolverine or the story of the X-Men? I mean, there's tons of stories. I mean, well, X-Men, there's tons of stories. Comic books in general has mountains of material to work with. But they're going to pick the best ones when they first started this. And they feel like they've already used up some of the best stuff in a lot of ways. And I think that might be true for the Avengers, with the exception of these last few movies. I just think some of the material in some of these areas, I think they're starting to reach into places where I think it's a little bit of a tougher sell to audiences, if that makes sense. Well, like, for example, Batman versus Superman. When you watch that movie, you had to know quite a bit about the storyline in those graphic novels. There was all sorts of Easter eggs and hints and kind of backstory that, you know, didn't make a lot of sense unless you really were familiar with Frank Miller's work. And I think Marvel avoided that, but Marvel basically explained everything by basically giving you five or six origin movies before they did Avengers. But now that that's been done, and you're now advancing, you're going to advance deeper into the Marvel lore, and things get crazy, and things get more out of whack, and you're going to need more knowledge and more familiarity with the broader universe for it to make sense. And I think they're going to start losing people. The further away they branch out from that, the further away they move from that. Because the crazier it gets, the more people will just throw their hands in their air and just be like, well, I guess anything's possible. You know, there's no limitations. There's no real drama or conflict in this because it seems like anything is possible. So there's no, how do you generate excitement like that? I think that's what eventually they're going to run into. I think Marvel has a ways to go. Marvel, I think, still has, they have the best writers. They have the best casting. They're just doing a tremendous job. So I think they have a ways to go before they run out of steam. I think DC has to rethink their entire approach. I think they have plenty of stories to tell, but I just think they're going to fall flat on their face unless they really evaluate exactly the style, the way they decided to make the Dawn of Justice movie, and how they're coming up with these other. I mean, they have to think about this. They have to rethink it because it's not. It doesn't look like it's going in a very positive direction. There's going to be another Jurassic Park movie, and it's going to make a ton of money because people love dinosaurs. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is probably done. Conjuring, they'll probably make three or four of those movies. They don't care. I mean, they're not really high-budget movies. Let's see. Cloverfield, I don't know. I don't know if that guy's going to write any more of those. The Huntsman, Snow White, those are dead. You're never going to see any more of those again. I mean, if you can't make a movie succeed with Charlize Theron and Emily Blunt and Jessica Chastain, you forget it. If you can't make that movie work, you failed. Zoolander's done. Independence Day should be done. And Deadpool. Deadpool is a sign of things to come. They took they decided to just, you know, we're not going to do the we're not going to go with the normal superhero movie model or X-Men movie model with tons of special effects and displays of dramatic mutant power and the clashing of two great forces that will decide the fate of the Earth and human civilization and humans. No, Deadpool basically is about one guy's desire for revenge. His hysterical and just, I mean, Deadpool is not like any other character, and he's not, that movie's unlike any other movie, and it made $700 million. And it was really a risk. So much of a risk that it stayed in development hell for years. And Ryan Reynolds and all these other guys had it. I think it took the leak of a scene that was being shot for it as kind of a test shot, and it got everyone excited because there's a fan base out there for Deadpool, and they nailed the Deadpool character. I think that shows that you should not go by a pure formula for some of these characters. Some of these characters need their own customization. If that makes any sense. The Wolverine movies have to have a little bit of their own style. The Storm, you know, whatever, Gambit, you know, they should all have their own style to them that reflect the main character or the focus. I think the Marvel movies in a way did that. You know, Iron Man is a little bit like Deadpool in that it's a cynical, you know, anti-hero at the front. And then Thor has like this more, you know, he's... The way he speaks, the way he acts, the way he moves around, he's more of like this, you know, hero from a different century that has like this chivalric but also cocky view to him. I mean, all the movies have a slightly different style depending on who the main character is. The Captain America movies are a little bit more serious in terms of political themes and commentary, whereas the Iron Man movies really aren't. And if you're not willing to wait for Hollywood to start maybe branching out just a little from what they've been doing the last few years, you're going to find a ton of, and you already have, because I mean, viewership and ratings all reflect this. A lot of people are staying home and watching TV. And when it comes to my genre and the spec fiction in general, there is a much more diverse and exciting collection of stories and shows and movies on TV. I think TV is showing the way. I think if something succeeds on television, it's more likely that the format will be transferred into a movie. I think The Walking Dead yielded World War Z, for example. Of course, World War Z fell flat on its face, and they gave up on that. So there's, but I also think some of these fantasy shows eventually led to movies like Mortal Instruments and Twilight and whatnot. So what we have on TV right now, we have, you know, Game of Thrones, which at least to date has not really yielded any kind of movie equivalent, because I don't think anyone in Hollywood can write as well as George R. R. Martin or any of the staff on the TV show. Walking Dead, we already said, they tried to make zombie movies, but they just suck at it. I think Walking Dead, again, it's one of those things where the characters and the writing is so good, you can't just put together a team of random script writers and say, here, make a zombie movie just like Walking Dead. They can't do it. The quality and the level of depth that show has, it cannot be reproduced easily. Orphan Black, I've only seen one or two episodes of Orphan Black, but it's a very cool show. Doctor Who is its own thing. I don't think they'll ever make a Doctor Who movie. There's no point. It's so fantastically popular the way it is. Why mess around with it? If there might be a Doctor Who movie, I'm not aware of it, fine, but I've never come across one or heard of one. But if there was a limited release one or whatever, you know, I missed it. The Doctor Who format is perfect, and I think there's no reason to think that you can put that into a two-hour format. 12 Monkeys is actually based on a movie, so that goes the other way. The Expanse is a very cool show. I can't wait for season two. I think that's the sign of a broader pattern. Like, I think we're going to see a lot more space opera and more like, you know, realistic space travel movies. You know, we've already seen The Martian do well. We saw Interstellar do well. We saw Gravity do well. And we're about to see a new movie come out later this year called Passengers with Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt. I'm very interested in that myself. So there's about one of those that comes out every year, and it always just kills. So maybe at some point, instead of putting out one a year, I think Hollywood maybe in the studios might put out two a year someday. Maybe. Anyway, I won't go through the rest of it. There's a bunch of other TV shows out there that I think show a lot of promise. I mean, there's plenty of superhero fantasy shows, The Flash and Arrow. I mean, The Flash is going to have their own movie. He's going to have his own movie. Arrow might have his own movie. The 100, that's a pretty cool show. I don't know if it's big enough to, or the premise is strong enough to just to be formatted into a movie, but it could. But anyway, I'm going to stop there. Like I said at the beginning, I'm considering shorter shows. This one ran a little bit past 45 minutes, so I have already gone past what I was originally going to say, but it is under an hour, so at least I got it a little bit shorter on that front. But anyway, that will do it for this episode. Just remember, if you are a self-published author, as I said at the beginning of the show, if you are a self-published author or one with a book through a small press or an indie publisher, in other words, a publisher that is not Penguin, Tor, or Spectre, you know, there's about 20 publishers out there, and there's dozens of publishers out there, and there's honestly only four or five publishers that I would say are the big time, and I don't really feel like I can help you much. I think you probably have a big publisher behind you, and you know, you're set. You're gold. I want to kind of interview authors that aren't there yet. They're not in the promised land yet. They don't have a big publisher behind them. There are dozens of those publishers, which means there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those novels out there. If you would like an interview, a review and an interview of your book, prescientscifi.com and here on Thought Crime, email me at jwfox@prescientscifi.com. I prefer science fiction. This podcast will maybe expand out to include other categories, but in terms of reviews of books, I am going to stick to science fiction. And basically, I have a very loose definition of science fiction, basically anything you would find on those shelves at the bookstore. Even if you have your own strict definition of science fiction or whatever, you know, we're not going to argue over labels. If someone could even just make the basis, bare minimum, you know, rational, you know, basic argument that this might be science fiction, that's enough for me. So again, you want an interview, or an author and a review, just email me, just tell me about your book. And then if it is available on Amazon or whatever, I will usually just buy it. You don't have to send me a free review copy. I don't do that. I usually just buy it. As long as it's not $20, you know, if it's $3 or $4, I'm just going to buy it. And even if I don't like it, at least you got, you know, a royalty payment out of me. So anyway, if you want to do that, let me know. If you are a host or co-host, or you are part of another podcast for whether it's science fiction, spec fiction, movies, TV, whatever, and you have any interest in either, I don't know, maybe being a co-host here or maybe having me be a co-host on your show, do kind of cross guest hosting kind of thing here. Also let me know. I'm going to do my own kind of search for those kind of shows and those kind of people and see if anyone's interested. I would like to kind of build on the community and the network I've already kind of built here with some of the authors I now speak to on a regular basis that are now good friends, and they actually have provided me critiques and feedbacks on my own work, as I do for them. And I'd like to do that for more authors out there. So that's what I offer. I don't offer, you know, the path to bestseller. Nobody offers that path. But I do offer something and would love to help out. So anyway, jwfox@prescientscifi.com. Follow me at Prescient Sci-Fi on Twitter. Also go to check out prescientscifi.com. If you're interested in some of my written work, I write under the name Jacob Fox. That is Fox with two X's. That is, you just go to jacobfox.com and you'll find more information on my two novels. I have two novels completed that need to be edited, developed, and published, but at this time I don't have the resources to do it. So for now, they are languishing in, well, not in a file cabinet, they're basically on my hard drive. That's where you will find my work. That will do it for this episode of Thought Crime. Until next time.